You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Coming up on the latest edition of the redcafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back over a week of mixed fortunes for United with contrasting results against Wolfsburg and Sunderland. The lads will be discussing Nani, Foster, Berbatov and Giggs, and Dov will provide us news of a thumping win for the reserves.
Welcome to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Oh, it's me, Stephen Darwin, as always, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov. How are we this week, guys?
Oh, a bit ill, Steve. You know, I've had an apparent case of swine flu, so I'm keeping myself quarantined so nobody can catch it off.
Really? Swine flu?
Well, yeah, somebody at work's got swine flu, so I've got...
So you're skiving off work because you don't want to catch it, is that it?
No, I'm not skiving. I'm genuinely ill, Dan, you know.
Well, I'm fine. I'm fit as a fiddle.
Fantastic. That's good to hear. Well, guys, let's kick off the show by reviewing the two games that have been played over the last week. We'll start with the most recent, which is, of course, the draw at home to Sunderland. Well, Dan, it was rather fortunate at the end of it, wasn't it, really, to get away with a draw. Sunderland, credit to them, they came at us and had a go, played two up front, and hopefully it was just an off day.
Yeah, Sunderland played very well. I was impressed. We just looked a little bit slow and lethargic. I mean, in the first half, I lost count of the amount of times that United give the ball away, just needlessly. You don't mind it when, it's once or twice, but it was virtually every other pass was going straight to Sunderland or from John O'Shea in the stand. It was unbelievable. I don't know what was going on. Scholes was awful. Big contrast to his game against Stoke. Welbeck looked a little bit isolated on the left. I thought he did all right, though. Some idiots in the crowd around me were booing him and stuff and get him off, but he's a young lad and you've just got to accept that he's going to have some games where he's not going to integrate into the team properly.
Was that the right time to play him in the game against Sunderland? Bring him in?
Probably not really. I don't really like the way Fergie sort of undermined Steve Bruce, because Sunderland, they're a decent team. They just beat Wolves 5-2 the week before. They're on a bit of a high. Jones and Bent are on form. You've got to take them seriously, and I don't think he did do, really. On another note, I thought Wayne Rooney as well. The last two games against Wolfsburg and Sunderland, of course, he's not been at the races. I'm just wondering why that is. Is it something to do with Clancy? I don't know.
Well, that's one of your big criticisms of Rooney, isn't it, Dan, that there are games where occasionally he's not involved at all. He'll go for a purple patch of scoring plenty of goals, and then there'll be two or three games where... he's just non-existent, and that's why you don't really like labelling him a world-class striker, isn't it?
Well, he's got everything there to become and go on to one of the best players of the world. It's not a problem. It's the fact that, you know, and I wouldn't say he didn't look interested or anything like that, or he didn't get involved, because he was trying, but things he was trying just weren't coming off. Well, yeah, I mean...
It's not the same for any striker, though. Like, Torres will score a hatful of goals for a few games, and then there'll be a game like against Chelsea on the weekend. He did absolutely nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the fact that, you know, I just don't think he's consistent enough and on a regular basis. So, you know, there's nothing much you can do about it. You just got to keep with him.
Dov, Ryan Giggs, obviously our most informed player, you could say, at the moment. Why was he on the bench? I mean, we've had an email from Nathan Hornsby. He's suggesting that was Ferguson sort of trying to make a statement that we need to be able to cope without someone like Ryan Giggs. With the international break, of course, coming up over this weekend and this week as well, surely Giggs should have been starting, because obviously he's not an international for Wales anymore.
Maybe it's just he's played a few games recently. Maybe it's just to give him a rest and obviously give some other players a go, like sort of Welbeck, and get Scholes back on his side and stuff like that. Obviously it didn't work because we were very, very poor, but I think it was just literally to give him a rest, not really to prove anything, because, well, we all know what Ryan Giggs is about and he is on top form, so... I think it's just squad rotation, nothing else.
And Dan, Ben Foster, he's back in the headlines, isn't he, for the wrong reasons. Went up for that sort of crossover that came over for Jones, and well, Jones obviously ahead of him. could that be it for Foster now, when you consider that Edwin van der Sar, the news is now that he could be back for the first team the next time we play against Bolton, and I believe he's in the squad for the reserves tonight as well. So Ben Foster, it's not looking like he's going to get a chance for a while now.
I'm undecided on that goal, because when I was there at the weekend, and I didn't think it was a foul at first. But Jones's arm is definitely up. I'm not saying it was a foul or anything like that, or it shouldn't have been given, but I think that for Ben Foster, right, that's the one person probably in the Premier League you do not want jumping for the ball with when you're in a bad run of form. And you know, it just goes from one thing to another with Foster at the moment. But I'm not writing him off before Dodd starts laughing at me. I'm not going to write him off. I still think he's a quality keeper, and he's going to learn from all these mistakes. And you know, as long as he doesn't sort of in two seasons' time keep on making the same, you know, mistakes, then he'll go on to be a class keeper. I've no doubts about that. But
so is that we're going to give him, Dan? We're going to give him two seasons to make mistakes.
Van der Sar is going to play for the rest of this season, isn't he? So say this time next season, you'd hope that Foster was probably given the first team shirt, you know, all season, unless we went and signed somebody.
As I say, I think he'll look for Fergie. He'll look for Sunday in the summer. It'll give him the confidence and say he's going to be England's future number one, etc., etc. But I think come the summer, a new goalkeeper will be on the shopping list.
I mean, apart from that, I thought he didn't play really, really badly, of course. But people were blaming him for the first goal. I'm not sure whether that for me is all John O'Shea's fault. He's not got tight enough to Darren Bent. And you could argue that the second goal was O'Shea's fault as well. Andy Reid just walked up to him. You know, O'Shea knows that Foster's going to be under a bit of pressure if that ball goes in the area. I think for
the first one, Dan, I think, like, I was inclined to go it was Ben Foster's fault, but I think it was a bit of both. I think maybe John O'Shea never closed Bent down enough, and I don't think Foster was quick enough to react. I was one of my thoughts with him is his footwork, and he just wasn't quick enough to get across.
I think Dov, the fact that Bent took it pretty early, he took one touch and then hit it, didn't he? Whereas I think a lot of players there would take an extra touch or do something else with it. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Foster could, if you're going to be funny, he should probably have got there, but being so early in the game, you know, first thing he was doing, I think that he gave him the benefit of the doubt for that one. But yeah, the second one, just unfortunate, was Kevin Jones who was jumping with him.
But do you not think it was a wrong decision as well? Do you not think he should have tried to punch it instead of catching it? Like, cause I think if he punched it, it was there first. He would have got the ball first, and he would have got it away. But he tried to catch it, and that's how like Jones came in, and the ball sort of went through his hands as such.
No, I think he was right to at least try and catch it. I don't know. I'm not a goalkeeper. I don't know. I don't know what's best in that situation. But you know what would have happened if he'd have punched it? It'd have come off the back of his fist and gone in or something. You know.
You're quite a Ben Foster fan. I mean, have you had enough yet, or are you still willing to give him a chance?
I'm definitely willing to give him a chance. With the Jones goal, I think it was there to be caught, and unfortunately, he just timed it all wrong, and Jones got there in front of him. But I've got my full faith in Ben Foster. Van der Sar is going to be back now, which is all good news for us on fighting on all fronts. We want to win the Champions League. We want to win the Premier League. So we're going to need a keeper that's on form and is confident. And that's exactly what Edwin van der Sar is. Unfortunately, the confidence isn't there at all for Ben Foster. But I'm still hopeful that he will be able to make the step up when van der Sar does eventually have to hang up his gloves, as it were. But let's give him time. I'd say next season is going to be a huge season for Foster. I don't know if van der Sar is going to carry on. I think he said, is it December or January? He's going to make a decision on whether he will retire at the end of this season. So that remains to be seen. But will he be happy sitting on the bench for another couple of seasons? That's another thing. Looks like he's what? Would you say he's probably going to miss out on the World Cup this year now? As he, well, it's fair, arguably he didn't take the chance when he got it.
I think he'll be in the squad, Steve. I think the only, from what I've seen in the Premier League this year, I think the only English keeper who's properly on form is Paul Robinson. I think he's been brilliant this season. It looks like he's shifted a bit of timber, so to speak, as well. So, I think he's really pushing for that number one spot. I've seen Robert Green a few times, and I don't have full confidence in him even. David James, of course, he's getting on, and he's still a decent shot stopper and everything else. But I can't really see anybody else out there. Joe Hart maybe, but he's going to be in a relegation battle with Birmingham. It won't do his confidence any good. So there's no reason why Ben Foster shouldn't sort of make his bid, so to speak. But he's got to start playing a bit better. So this week I'm going to agree with you. I think he was poor. But going back to the Wolfsburg game, just briefly, like Kuzak played in that game and I thought he did all right. And then he gets dropped again for Saturday, and I think it's a bit hard for Kuzak. I mean, what's he got to do to get in the team now? I mean, Foster, as you rightly said, has made a few mistakes and everything, but Kuzak, when he's come in, he's not done a lot wrong. Even though I don't personally rate him, he's not done a lot wrong. So,
in terms of confidence as well, Dan, I think he's got a lot more confidence than what Ben Foster has at the moment. And I don't see what Kuzak has to do to sort of prove that he's good enough to be given a prolonged run in the team. If that doesn't tell him now that he's never going to make it at Man United, then
yeah. I mean, I've never viewed him, even since we signed him, I never viewed him as a number one long term, but I mean, you've got to give a guy a chance when it's needed, and with Van der Sar out and Foster, you know, Foster's done all right for us. He's not been awful, but there are mistakes in his game. Maybe it is time for Kuzak, but now, of course, Van der Sar's coming back, so I don't know where to lose him, really.
There's a question mark over the goalkeeping position, let's just say
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
What about one of your favourite players, Dan? Dimitar Berbatov. What a goal,
I tell you, amazing goal. But I mean, his all-round play on Saturday was sick. I mean, he was probably one of our only players that looked like he was actually, yeah, you heard it, he was actually trying. Every time Berbatov got the ball, he held it, he didn't lose it that many times, and he was the one that was keeping control of the ball and playing other people in, whereas everybody else, when they seemed to get it, they didn't want it, or they were just having an off day, you know, and it was not happening for them. But I mean, the way he took his goal was fantastic, and some of his passing was superb, really.
I think maybe just in the second half. I think in the first half it wasn't. I thought it was absolutely garbage, to be honest, in the first half. I thought it was rubbish. And then obviously in the second half, got a dressing down. And
yeah, I mean, I think in the first half, like you say, no one was at the races, and it must be very hard for a forward. I'm not defending the rest of the team, of course, but you know, it must be hard for a forward to get into the game when you know you're not having any of the ball. But the second half, I mean, especially after he scored, some of the tricks he was pulling off were pretty special. Of course, then Sunderland score again, then we've got to go back at it, but I thought he played very well.
And Dov, what about Nani? Another sort of bad performance, wasn't it? I mean, it's being made out that he had an awful performance, but was he really that bad, or are we just sort of being a bit harsh on him?
I don't think he was that bad. I think it was a little bit of an atypical Nani performance. I mean, he was good in points and trying to beat a man, but his final ball was never there. Although, one thing I will give him credit for, his set pieces are fantastic. He took, four or five corners, and every single time put them right in the danger area and cost Sunderland a lot of problems. So it's definitely one of his plus points. But I just think he just needs to work on his final ball. Once he's got that sorted out, it'll be a massive danger for other teams when they're playing us. I really like him. I think he's a great player, and I think it wasn't as bad as people have made out.
I get the impression that he's like the scapegoat of Man United at the moment. Like you say, Dov, he didn't have a brilliant game, you know, but he didn't do, you know, a lot wrong compared to other players, you know. But he's the one getting all the flak for it. Like you say, most of his corners straight in the danger area. It's just like, I get the impression, though, that when Nani has the ball, that the rest of his teammates don't know kind of what he's going to do with it. I don't know if that's something to do with his decision-making or whatnot, but it just seems like that they're not quite sure whether he's going to put it in the box, whether he's going to come inside, whether he's going to go on the outside and swing it in. I don't know, but you'd think he'd try and learn that for now. You know, he's been there. This is his second season, isn't it? So, he's got potential, so hopefully he'll be doing all right. But
do you think, Anton scored the own goal, do you think when they got home and sat down and had dinner, Rio went up to him and goes, oh, you've got merit, you just got merit?
Yeah, I hope so. To be fair, where I was sat, I didn't even notice a deflection. I was raving over everything, obviously, like, saw it on TV. Yeah, blatantly going wide. That shows you how much United be going for it if Ever is in the area. Because he's normally the one who, I think he sits back, doesn't he, at the corners and stuff. So, yeah. We were lucky to get a point out of the game in terms of how well we played. But, you know, that's what champions are made of.
Yeah, and after we scored the equaliser as well, what about Craig Gordon's amazing save from Berbatov?
Yeah, yeah.
He was lying on the ground. That was absolutely brilliant. That's why he's going to be number one.
Just moving on to the Wolfsburg game, guys. 2-1 victory. Obviously, a much more pleasing result than the Sunderland game. But, yeah, it was a good performance, wasn't it? And against a what looks a really good Wolfsburg side as well. Of course, the German champions. Dov, what did you make of it? Were you pleased with just to have got the 3 points, or were you hoping for a bit more of an emphatic win at home?
No, I was very impressed by Wolfsburg, especially going forward. Misimovic, who we spoke about before, I thought he had a really, really good game. And Dzeko took his goal well as well. I was expecting quite a hard game, to be honest, as well. And they gave us that. I mean, they sort of showed that they are definitely not going to be pushover in this competition. Obviously, it's their first season in it as well, so they're a bit inexperienced. But I think they can maybe grow into it and be one of the sort of dark horses to give teams a challenge. I thought over the game, we maybe just edged it as well.
And Dan, Dov mentioned Dzeko there, the striker that got the goal. He looks a really decent player, doesn't he? And, well, we were linked with him throughout the summer, and he looks like he'd have been a pretty decent option for us, actually, with his height as well and his ability in the air. We could have done with him.
Yeah, I thought he had a very good game. He holds the ball up well. He took his goal well. But I'm not sure. To me, he doesn't look mobile enough. I mean, that might have just been a one-off game, but I wasn't watching him, you know, all game, so I don't know what. Do you know, like United players, 9 times out of 10, they go all the way along the front line, don't they? And I don't think Dzeko did that. He's more central. But I thought that that Graffiti, how do you pronounce his name? Graffiti? Well, I don't know, whatever. He wasn't very good. He was awful. Sorry about the pronunciation. I've no idea. But yeah, he wasn't very good.
Dzeko, too much similar to Berbatov in a way, then?
Yeah, I don't think them two would play in the same team. But I could certainly see Dzeko and Rooney together, yeah.
And Dov, great to see Michael Carrick back in the side, playing well and scoring a fantastic goal as well.
Yeah, it was good to see. Hopefully that'll bring his confidence back, because we all know he's been a bit low in recent weeks for reasons unknown, but like, hopefully that'll bring his confidence back, and he'll get a decent run in the side as well, which I think he should be in the team, first choice. I would put my head of Paul Scholes, to be honest. I thought Anderson's had a good couple of games as well. I thought he was good when he came out against Sunderland, so he's another one.
Lads, how long are we going to give Valencia? Because against Wolfsburg, he didn't do what I expected him to do when he joined for United. I mean, he's got so much pace. He's literally lightning, and he doesn't use it. You know, why doesn't he just knock the ball past the fullback and run? Because not many players will catch him, and I just think that sometimes he have you not noticed when he receives the ball, he tends to stop dead a lot of the time.
He tries to play safe, doesn't he? I think he's just trying to not upset anyone, if you like. He doesn't want to give the ball away, but that's not where his qualities lie. Like you say, he's good at taking the fullback on and whipping in a cross. And at the moment, I think he's just a bit cautious about trying to take too many people on, and he'd rather do the simple thing, which is fair enough. When you just join the club, you're desperate to impress. You're desperate not to make a mistake, but like you say, the only way Valencia is going to show his real quality is by doing his natural game,
if you're in the fullback area, you know, the right wing or whatever, when you lose the ball there, it's not going to affect you that much. You know, go for the fullback, have a go at him. If you don't get past him, do something else and then have another go. I just think that there's a lot of potential in him as well as Nani, and I just think that we're not utilising him enough. I don't think we get the ball out quick enough to Valencia either. I think sometimes he's in acres of space and we're too slow to shift it, which may be something that could be looked at, but not the manager, so just my opinion.
And Gabriel Obertan, he should surely be an option too. I believe he's on his way back.
I'll be honest, I've not seen much of him. It's always good to see new players coming to your club, and hopefully he'll have an impact, but I assume he'll have a few games in the reserves as well, so we can have a look at him then.
In the Berbatov, and it's 1-1! They're back level. It's taken them 50 minutes to create any sort of danger. And Sunderland, having seen Gordon rescue them, failed to clear it properly. And when the ball came back in, Berbatov was ready to pounce. It was a fine finish.
It's reserves review time now then. And Dov is going to bring us up to date with how the reserves have been getting on. Dov, I believe it was a 4-0 victory against a team that first team couldn't get the better of.
It was indeed. And it was emphatic, the win. 4-0, four beautiful goals. I'll just go through the goals because they were all lovely. First one was Magnus Ekrem. Scored a free kick from about 20 yards, curled over the wall and went into the bottom near side corner. Beautiful goal. Josh King got the second. There was a bit of confusion between defenders. He dribbled in from the left, played a 1-2 in the box with Tosic, and then placed it in the sort of far right-hand side corner, as you would look at. It's a lovely goal. Great sort of feat by Josh King as well, and Tosic. And then Ekrem got his second of the game. Scored a 40-yard lob, which was absolutely stunning. It was a great goal. I'd urge everybody to go and have a look at that. And then Josh King, he ran onto a long ball from Oliver Norwood, raced onto it, showed his pace and power, and then sort of placed the finish into the far left-hand side for me, sort of just inside the box. But United were brilliant in this one, from getting beat off Liverpool in their last reserve game. Going into this game, just sort of showed how good they are, and sort of some Norwegian flair coming about. So I think Ole Solskjaer is having some good words with his countrymen. But yeah, that was a good performance, and it's good to see the reserves winning again.
I've seen the goals as well, Dov, and it really is worth stating that each one of them was absolutely superb. Josh King, especially, he looks a real prospect. Whether he'll get a run out in the first team this season remains to be seen. I mean, he came on, didn't he, in the Carling Cup last sort of few minutes. I doubt he'll get a starting role, because obviously that's the sort of competition that Michael Owen is going to be utilised in. Mm. But he does look a frightening prospect.
Yeah, Ekrem as well. He sort of ended the last season in the reserves very strongly, and has began this season just as good. And he's another one I'd like to see getting a chance, maybe in a substitute appearance for the first team Cup, something like that.
How old's Ekrem?
I think he's 19. He's quite young.
Because we've heard a few bits about him for like the past season and a bit, haven't we, really? And he's not really... Is there a worry that he's not going to step up because he's been playing well in the reserves, like, every other game? So, you know, players like Darren Gibson are getting in there, so why can't Ekrem get in there?
But like I said before, I mean, he has been amazing in the reserves. And he's a 40-yard lob. Just players that can spot things like that. I mean, like, Beckham made his name on that, for example.
Well, Dov, just looking at one of the sort of more mainstays in the reserve team and someone who came through in the first team quite remarkably last season as well, it's Federico Makeda. Damian Miller emailed in and sort of said that he's obviously not seen much of Makeda, of course, in the first team. And he was just wondering, has he been banging them in for the reserves? Has he been playing well for the reserves?
Well, Steve and Damian, he hasn't. He played against Liverpool in the 1-0 defeat. And he played in the game against Sunderland, but was brought off after 45 minutes. Not really been playing too well in a couple of games he has had. He's also he's been away at international duty with Italy youth teams and stuff like that as well. But Fergie's basically told him sort of to concentrate on sort of the youth football, the reserve football. That's basically where he is for now, anyway. He'll get first team opportunities, but he's sort of to concentrate where he is. He's not really played too well, so. That's really all that's been happening with
them. Yeah, I remember reading, actually, Dov, you mentioned there Ferguson's told Makeda that he does need to focus on United. And I believe that is because he's been away so much with the Italian youth squads. And I think he said the same for Danny Welbeck as well, that both of them need to sort of get their priorities straight in a way. And he didn't say it in those words, but I think that's what he meant, that sometimes club does need to come before country in terms of youth international football. Whether you agree with that, I don't know. Do you agree with that, Dov, that they should be concentrating more on United, or do you think that when your country calls, you can't really turn it down, whether it's youth or first team level?
I think it depends on the game for your country. If, for example, if he was called up for the Under-20 World Cup, then I would say go to the Under-20 World Cup, get the experience as well, and try and win a youth trophy. At ladies' development, just as long as he gets games as well, I'm quite happy for him to go away and play and stuff like that. But if it's just sort of pointless youth friendlies and stuff like that, then things like that, I'm a bit more just state your club and get coached off Ole Solskjaer and become as prolific as he is.
Excellent stuff. Well, before we move on, just a quick mention in case people haven't seen the news. There's been a new deal offered to Richie De Laet. I believe it's a 3-year contract, so that's all good for him. And there's also talk of Danny Welbeck being offered a new deal. Dan, you've got the news of that. Has he actually been offered the deal, or is it just something that's in the pipeline?
Yeah, I think he's been offered it. He's obviously going to sign it as well. I'm just wondering, you know, you look at it and it's like 12 grand a week for someone who's, you know, barely made an impression on United yet. And I just think it's a bit... Ferguson wanted, last year, was saying that, you know, the likes of Makeda and Welbeck have got to keep their feet on the ground. Yet he's going offering them new contracts on 12 grand. But I suppose you've got to do it or else somebody else will sniff them up.
Okay, well, cabbage and player of the week time now then. Dan, player of the week for you this week.
Berbatov. Quite simple. When he came on against Wolfsburg, he had a big influence on the game. And on Saturday against Sunderland, I thought he was our man of the match. So, yeah, Berbatov for me.
Dov, agree with that?
I'm giving it to John O'Shea. Because John O'Shea set up Berbatov's amazing goal. And if it wasn't for John O'Shea, Berbatov would never have scored that goal.
Fair enough. I am going to agree with Dan and give it to Dimitar Berbatov. I think it's the second time in a couple of weeks I've actually given it to him, but thoroughly deserved. As we said, absolutely superb goal. The technique on that was truly sublime. And yeah, just his all-round performance as well, linking up play, getting involved, celebrating goals. Berbatov can do nothing wrong for me at the moment. And, well, cabbage of the week. Dov, start with you this time.
A predictable as ever, Ben Foster. Yeah, just that second goal. I thought he made the wrong decision and just was rubbish just for that. Sort of lost us 2 points. So.
And?
Wayne Rooney. Not to be said, I think he was poor in both games. And hopefully they'll get a bit of form together. So yeah, Rooney. Steve?
I'm going to give it to the manager this week, to Sir Alex Ferguson.
Controversial. What?
That would be because of the decision to play Danny Welbeck and to play him on the wing as well. I don't think he is a winger, to be honest. And I don't think it was the right time to play him. Like Dan mentioned earlier in the show, Sunderland are a really decent side. And they're going to punish you if you sort of take it lightly. And that's what we did. And I just don't agree that Welbeck should have been playing. But I'm not blaming it entirely, the defeat on Welbeck at all, because, of course, it wasn't his fault. But out of all the poor performances, he was probably up there with being one of the worst. So,
just talking about Fergie, did you like his go at the fourth official during the Sunderland game? That was quite a good moment, I thought, where he went crazy at the fourth official when Anderson was fouled in the box and it wasn't given. And it went mental, and then he kept saying a couple of bits and pieces, expletives, and walking away, and then coming back like 2 seconds later. It was probably the genius.
Exactly, you love to see that, don't you, from your manager? You want to see passion, and even if the decision was probably right, you still want to see the manager up and with his arms in the air. And yes, it's all good, but in terms of selection, I don't think Welbeck should have played, and I thought Ryan Giggs should have been in with the fact that we had the international break. So that's what I'm basing my decision on.
It was taking 30 seconds to book players. He couldn't get up the pitch when the second goal was scored. He was telling Wayne Rooney he needed a rest. Just not fit enough to referee a game of that standard. Just not fit enough. It's an indictment in our game. We pay referees, full-time referees, they're supposed to be. Not fit enough. And then credit to both sets of players. The pace of the game today from both sets demanded a good fit referee, and we didn't have one. Some people are fit as dogs, butcher's dogs at 65 years of age. You see it all the time. People say, you look after yourself and you keep fit. Age doesn't come into it.
Moving on to emails, guys. We've only got a couple to mention, as we've sort of covered a few already. Sean Fields, he couldn't believe that we couldn't beat Sunderland at home, and he didn't go much on the Wolfsburg performance either. He didn't think we did too well in that one, even though we came out with a win. Nathan Hornsby, he's talked about Cristiano Ronaldo, amongst other things, saying that he's really pleased to see him doing well for Real Madrid. And the fact that he's playing with a smile on his face as well, he says, is good to see. And that he'd love a dream Champions League final against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. He thinks that would be really an intriguing encounter. And it certainly would be with all the Galacticos they've assembled at Real Madrid at the moment. Oh, it's the time of the podcast for the Legends profile now. Dov, who have you got this week for us?
Well, after last week, we've got our first captain after the post-war. This week, we've got our longest-serving manager. It's Sir Matt Busby. So, I shall begin. Sir Matt Busby was born on the 26th of May, 1909, in Bells Hill, which is in Scotland near Glasgow, managed the team from 1945 to 1969, and then again from 1970 to 71. But something I found out only today when doing research, he actually had a good playing career, reasonable playing career, and played for Manchester City and Liverpool. Talking about him as a player first before I talk about the clubs, apparently, according to a few people who actually seen him play, he had excellent ball control and great passing skills. Apparently, he's able to pick a pass through a defence like a knife, a hot knife through butter. But he played for Man City, signed as a 17-year-old, a one-year contract on £5 a week. So, there you go. Could you live on £5 a week, Steve?
How much?
£5 a week as a 17-year-old. Played 226 games for them, and then moved to Liverpool and played 118 games for them. And obviously, he was there till the start of the Second World War. After the Second World War, he was actually offered a coaching role at Liverpool, but he wanted to be a manager. And he knew a United, he's a sort of scout guy, it was Louis Rocca, who I mentioned last week, and they were friends. And he, Louis Rocca, basically said to him, "Oh, look, I'll get you a job at Manchester United." He was then offered a job, and that's what the letter wrote to him was. It stated a job in case anybody at Liverpool got wind they were offering him the manager's job. But before he accepted this job, he demanded full control. So he wanted control over tactics, team selection, transfers, everything. He wanted full control of the whole team, which was unprecedented. It never, ever happened before. So he got his control, and he was subsequently given the job, and made an instant impact. Played some free-flowing, expansive passing football that we're generally known for now. Finished second in 1947, 48, 49 and 51 in the league, eventually winning it in 1952 and again in 1956 and 57. But I think probably one of the things he's most renowned for is instead of old players of the team, sort of from the late 40s, early 50s, instead of replacing them with sort of new signings, it brought in younger players, like the likes of Duncan Edwards, players like that. And then these were obviously known as the Busby Babes, quite famously. And also, in 4 years in the 50s, he only made two major signings, which that would never happen these days at all. Also, we all know about the Munich Air disaster, and Sir Matt Busby actually received the last rites during that as well. But he recovered and rebuilt the side. And what a first trophy since the Munich disaster was the FA Cup in 1963, with a side that sort of contained your Law, Best, Charlton, the Holy Trinity, as they were known. He then went on to win the league in 65, 67, and that famous trophy, the European Cup, in 1968. Although a year later, he then retired from the game. The current side, there's a few sort of, I don't know what you call them, sort of landmarks and things like that. I mean, in 1999, we won the European Cup on Sir Matt Busby's 90th birthday. In 2008, we won the Champions League 50 years after the Munich Air disaster and 40 years since Matt Busby won the European Cup as well. Also, the day after the 100th anniversary of Busby's birth, we played Barcelona in the Champions League final last year, obviously, as well. So there's lots of little tie-ins, and like you see how he is the sort of the thread of the club as well. He's all about it. A couple of nice facts as well. Warwick Road North, I don't know if any of you know that street. That was actually renamed Sir Matt Busby Way. So that's it. And also, you've got the bronze statue outside Old Trafford. He died on the 20th of January, 1994, a year after Sir Matt Busby Way was named, died of cancer, which obviously is not a good thing, but he lived to a ripe old age of 84, which isn't bad. But as a manager, that's where obviously he'd be most remembered. He was a visionary manager. He was the first sort of manager to pioneer youth systems and youth teams and stuff like that. Obviously, the Busby Babes coming from that. He also wanted to play European football, which a lot of people at the club and a lot of sort of people in the English FA didn't really want to do. They didn't want to play European football, but he said, and this is a quote for him, quote from him, "Challenges should be met, not avoided." So he wanted to play European football, and that was his dream to win the European Cup. He also was one of the first managers to introduce a network of scouts, because before then, a lot of teams, they got their players from about, let's say, a 30-mile radius from where they were based. But he had scouts like all over the country. For example, like Bobby Charlton, he got from Newcastle, and Duncan Edwards, he came from Birmingham, things like that. So he got players from everywhere, obviously, and George Best as well from Northern Ireland. Also, he actually coined the nickname the Red Devils. So he seen it was used by a rugby team in Salford, and he thought it summed up Manchester United. So he, shall we say, borrowed it. And that's what we're known as today. And also, another interesting fact, he's actually mentioned in a Beatles song. It's called Dig It, I believe, and it's on the Let It Be album. He's quite a cultural phenomenon, shall we say. I'm going to finish on a quotation that he made when he was made a freeman of the city of Manchester. He said, "There is nothing wrong with trying to win, so long as you don't set the prize above the game. There is no dishonour in defeat, as long as you play to the limit of your strength and skill. What matters above all is that the game should be played with the right spirit, with the utmost respect, resource of skill and courage, with fair play and no favour, with every man playing as a member of the team, the result accepted without bitterness or conceit."
Well, what a fantastic legend's profile. So Matt Busby, I mean, legend doesn't really do him justice, does it? But that's just about it for this week's RedCafe.net podcast. Of course, there's not a game next week, but do make sure you send all your feedback, questions and comments to podcast@redcafe.net. Remember to sign up to the Facebook group too if you haven't done that already. That just leaves me to say thanks very much for listening and see you next week.